How's it going, everybody? This is Preston Johnson at Sports Cheetah on Twitter, and we are here for another edition of A Petty Moose, brought to you by Fantasy Guru Elite. You can check out more of my content there, podcasts, breakdowns of games, analysis, as well as DFS content if you're playing fantasy sports. I am no longer allowed to play here in the state of Nevada. Imagine that. But if you are, check stuff out there. They're helping us out with the podcast and some of the production costs. And anyways, they got some good stuff there. 30-plus contributors at this point. I'm here with Matt Lindemann, at Lindetrain on Twitter. He works for Caesars. It's been 2 weeks. It feels like it's been a lot longer, I'll be honest. We took 1 week off. I was out of town. I went to the World Series. We'll end that there. Then you went out of town. You went to a UGA Kentucky game. And this is what actually one of the points, not points, but topics will be, is I'm really intrigued now. Bless Matt's soul.
All I'm going to say is I'm happy we didn't have a show last week, because I was happy last week that we didn't have a show last week, because I knew we weren't going to be able to avoid the topic of talking about that game. And I really like Kentucky, unfortunately, and was just so wrong. I mean, could not have been more wrong. So
yeah, I was going to say, I felt bad. We talked about it before too. I don't want to say I prepared you, but I said, you know, this is usually how it goes. You love a spot. It's your own team. You're flying out to the freaking game.
No shot.
And this is usually how it goes. They just stomp on your heart in the worst possible way. Like from the get-go, punt return, quick touchdown. It just kind of, you knew. And even then, they had a 4th-and-1 chance to push the plus 10s, because I did take some plus 10 with you, and then they fumbled the ball. But neither here or there. It was a heartbreaking as a fan. We want to know, as a fan, 702-364-1100. Your most heartbreaking sports moments, as well as questions and betting on football, basketball, college basketball's here. Let us know what you guys want, what questions you have, and we'll break it down. It was interesting because I had brought up, before we get into some of the calls or some of the Twitter questions, I had brought up during that same conversation we were having that it's brutal. And for me, it was BYU in the year that Jimmer Fredette was there, and they had a real shot at a run in the college basketball March Madness tournament. Of course, I mean, Jimmer, they end up going, you know, almost making a shot at the Elite Eight. They lost to Florida, I think, in double overtime in a game. Jimmer went 1-for-9 from three. So they were really good anyways. But Brandon Davies, who played for a couple seasons with the Sixers, NBA-level guy, he got disqualified or kicked off the team for breaking the honor code at BYU. And so that still tilts me to this day. Even Kessler happened to bring it up the other day, Aaron Kessler on Twitter. Coincidentally, he had no clue that we had just talked about it. And he had a big futures bet on it. But, I mean, that is, like, the one moment for me, like, the most heartbreaking. That's the one time in my life where BYU might have a shot to do something cool, and it got taken away. So, I honestly, from that point on, I kind of have been less intrigued by BYU sports, because they just, I mean, even, like, Boise State, BYU the other day, like, 1 yard away from pulling the upset as a big double-digit dog, 7 seconds to run 2 plays, and they found a way to run 1 play and lose yards. So, it's just the way I've gotten used to it. Now I just don't care as much.
Well, now, if I'm not mistaken, they would have played Butler in the Elite Eight, right, if they had won that game against Florida?
Yes.
So, I mean, the dream was going to die then anyway.
Brad,
right?
Stevens would have held Jimmer for, like, 4%
right,
shooting.
Yeah, yeah, there was no way they were going to be denied. No, I mean, I could go on for days about NCAA tournaments, but I think back-to-back years, 2014, making the finals, that unbelievable run, which with a team that was, you know, poorly seeded, they shouldn't have been an 8 seed, but still kind of having a different role there.
Is that the Julius Randle team?
Yeah, the Randle, some Harrison twins. Probably, yeah. And making that run, and then the next, you know, coming up short was devastating. Then coming up, you know, the next year you go 38-0, and then come up short again in the Final Four, just absolute torture. But I don't know. I think that's just the life of being a college basketball fan. It's a little bit easier with college football when you have that loss in the middle of the year. You know, you're kind of ready to move on. You understand you might not win at all, so a little bit tougher with hoops.
I tried to look real quick. I mean, Kentucky, I mean, how many basketball championships do they have?
8.
Jeez.
But only 4 in the last, like, 60 years.
Only 4 in the last 60 years. And then, like, final 4 appearances is 6, 17, 16, something like that.
Ridiculous.
I have them listed
here.
It's not bad. It's okay to be a Kentucky hoops fan.
Yeah, I can't complain. Just, very heartbreaking those last few trips.
We have our first caller, Jim. I don't know if you're on the line. Can you hear us, bud?
Yeah, I can hear you. Thanks.
Nice. How you doing tonight?
Good. How about you?
We are doing well. I don't know if you've listened before or called before. We're doing things a little bit differently. We want to know first, before you ask us a question about a game or a sports betting philosophy, whatever it may be, you need to tell us, I'm putting you on the spot, you need to tell us what your most heartbreaking sports moment is as a fan. I don't know if you have a college or a professional team that you root for specifically, but your most heartbreaking moment.
Probably, actually the most recent one, I'm a Giants fan in Philly. So probably last year when the Eagles hit a 65-yarder with 2 seconds left as the clock was winding down to beat the Giants at the Link, and that pretty much catapulted the Giants season into hell, and Ben McAdoo's season, they've been very horrific since. So that's probably the most recent.
Did you have some side bets with friends and stuff too?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm pushing 40, but, I mean, it would have hurt a lot more if it was 15, 20 years ago when it was life or death.
Sure,
but,
sure.
Yeah, I lost a little money, and I couldn't really say much on Sunday come that, or Monday come that day.
Nice, nice. Hey, what else do you have for us tonight?
I guess my question is just as we're in the – I know you guys are a little focusing on college tonight, so
– No problem.
As college basketball is obviously starting and we're in the midst of college football as a better, and, you know, I'm always trying to – keep my network the sharpest, and from consensus is that, you know, when it comes to football and college football and NFL, it's like, you know, you do your best, and just the sample size and the chaos and variance of the NFL and college football. But a lot of my my sharp network is really looking forward to college basketball, saying that's the biggest edge, giving so many games and conferences and whatnot, maybe, you know, NBA totals behind, MLB in the middle of all those. But, Cheat, I guess it's more for you as a pick giver. I guess what do you rank as your bread and butter from first, maybe, I don't know, it is college basketball or whatnot, but, like, what's your bread and butter from first to last of the major sports, including the two colleges, of what you make the most money on betting-wise?
Sure. No, that's a good question. It's going to vary year to year, but over time, my best and biggest ROI and what I bet the biggest now just because of it is college football. I'm not sure why. I obviously put a lot of time into it, but I put a lot of time into basketball too. And I think one thing that's positive is not trying to do too many leagues. I don't try to pretend to bet hockey or golf or tennis or soccer. I bet the WNBA occasionally, but usually it's just from information from other people that I know that do it pretty well. But really, I only try to bet football and basketball and baseball for about 2 months before I go into shutdown mode in the summer and prep for football. So for me, it's definitely college football first. I guess maybe surprising to some people, but second for me, ROI-wise, is NBA. You'd think it'd be college basketball, but for some reason, going on like 3 years in a row, everyone wins like the first few weeks of college basketball. And because it's the time to just crush a market that's really soft and doesn't know a ton about all the schools. And I know Matt's the opposite of me. The last two seasons, I'd gone down like 15 or 20 units in each of the two seasons. And both times I recovered, one time into the plus side, luckily by the end of the year, but one time I ended up slightly down on the season. But as conference play goes, that's actually when I'm like my bread and butter during college. So I'm trying to limit my volume early in the year and just get some more, data and info on teams before I try to actually bet them. But college, you'd think would be third, but the last two seasons it has not been. Actually, it would be fourth of the main four leagues. So for me, that's my order. NFL would actually be third. I'll let Matt give his little breakdown too, if you have an order.
Yeah, I mean, I guess MLB would be far and away probably first. That's, you know, pretty good amount of what I make betting. And then I'd say probably college basketball has moved ahead of college football really for me at this point. I mean, I've had a good year this year, but I'd say I'm a little bit sharper with college basketball. I have a little bit bigger edge there. Actually not as good, like really early, like this first week, I kind of have a tough time with. I kind of need to see everyone a couple times. I didn't do very well at all the other night, had a couple real stinkers, but, college football and college basketball, I'm not like graded either, but, you know, grind out a profit on each. And then the pro sports, you know, the other ones besides baseball, I really don't bet that much. I mean, I'm not good at NFL, don't know anything really about NBA and NHL. I've done fine in the past, but I don't really mess with that. So, I don't know though. You know, it's just kind of, for me, it's mostly college and baseball.
Nice.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of funny. The thing I find the funniest about this whole thing is, like I said, I try to, you know, only follow the sharpest, and it seems that, you know, America loves their NFL the most and everybody's the most confident with the NFL, but even the sharpest of the sharps I follow, given the sample size and the chaos of the variance of the NFL, a lot of them even put that last. They're just like hoping it shakes out to profit come the end of the year.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. NFL's a grind. I think this is one of my better starts to NFL. But I was just telling someone else the other day, and then we have another caller. I appreciate the call, Jim. I'm usually like, honestly, at the end of the year, it's like 3 to 7 units ahead, 3 to 7X in NFL, kind of clockwork every year. I'm going to jinx it now. So far this year, I think I'm up like 7.9. Like, I might be up almost 8, but I'll probably lose some of it back just because I started hot, just variance, right? But It's tough to beat the NFL. I mean, it's such a really, really tight market. And I think ultimately just finding a few spots, my volume's way lower. I'll bet, you know, 2 to 4, maybe 5 games tops in a week on an NFL. And, you know, whereas college football, I'll have 15 to 20 a week. Maybe it starts slowing down now that we're in week 10, week 11 for college football. But, it's tough to beat the NFL. I don't blame anyone who just decides to pass, like Matt basically almost altogether just said, there's no point anymore.
It gets frustrating every week watching people complain about it. And, you know, I mean, it's just on you if you're pouring a ton of time into it. Oh, wow. That was huge.
Dude, it's like in his hands.
I thought he caught it. I looked
he
away.
Did catch it. It was fourth and three.
We're sweating under here. In
well,
the
I laid 16 and a half on Monday morning. So I
so
need NC State.
That.
But yep, he just dropped the touchdown.
Gross.
Had they just dropped a touchdown like 2 drives before that. Anyway, I interrupted you.
No, it's all good. I just think the NFL, you know, I think you got to know what you're getting into. I think most of these guys do, but they, you know, push through anyway, try to find an edge and hope variance shakes out like Jim said, you know, but it's tough.
We have Marco on the line. Marco, how you doing tonight?
Hey, pretty good.
We're doing something, I don't know if you heard, a little bit different. You may have called before. You may have listened before. We normally will take your question, but I'm putting everyone on the spot tonight. You have to tell us as a sports fan, whether it's pro, college, your most heartbreaking moment as a sports fan.
Okay. It's my first time calling, but
okay.
There's probably two because one of them happened this year, but I'm a all Colorado team kind of guy. I'm in Colorado and I love all my teams.
Okay.
One of them was definitely the Seattle Broncos Super Bowl. That crushed me.
Uh-huh.
Especially because later on in a parking lot, somebody wrote the score 43-8 on my dirty windshield.
just to rub it in. That's brutal.
Yeah. And then the other one was just the way the Rockies went out this year, you know, that high-powered offense, and we couldn't scratch out a single run in the last 2 games. It just crushed me, and it was brutal.
You know, I really feel for Rockies fans. I mean, that's a great fan base. They packed that place, and the front office is terrible. I really think they deserve better. They deserve a World Series, but it's just hadn't happened yet.
What would you put if I was to? I'll ask each of you this question first, Marco. I'll start with Marco. Over under 5.5 seasons before the Rockies make a World Series, would you bet over or under?
Unfortunately, based on the history of the front office, like you said, which is miserable, I'd have to go over.
Yeah, I think over would probably supposed to be like -300.
It's a matter of can they hang on to Arenado and Story, really, is, I guess, the question.
Yeah,
pitching's been great.
They didn't re-sign LeMahieu, which is going to hurt. They just don't keep guys. I could see them trading off Arenado for 3 prospects that won't add up to crap, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, I'd have to say over 5.5 seasons, which I hate to say, but I got to be realistic.
Yeah, I'm with him.
All right, man, what else do you have for us tonight? Go ahead, fire away.
I guess just basically a question on the Clemson-BC game coming up Saturday night. I think Clemson's going to cover the spread no problem. But I'm wondering if the cold weather will have any effect for Clemson going up there on the over. If it's going to be something maybe like a 42-10 blowout or something like that. Because like I said, I think the spread's safe with Clemson, but I wonder if they'll slow it down because of the cold weather. If that's just kind of a bull crap, you know, way to look at a game.
Sure.
Now, I believe from what I read earlier, I think kind of the description for most of the East Coast this week as far as weather is cold but quiet. I think it's supposed to be pretty cold everywhere. I don't think wind or, you know, precipitation is supposed to be an issue at all. So I don't know how much of an effect. I mean, it's definitely probably going to bother Clemson a little bit, but will they take the air out of the ball completely with the way they've been moving it? I don't know. So, you know, and it's another thing if, you know, that really depends on the health of Dylan, how explosive he can be for BC also. I mean, they're going to need him to, you know, he's going to have to play well if they're going to have any shot of covering or the game going over. So I think it's probably going to come down to that.
And it came down already. It opened at 61, and now it's 57. And there was even another game Matt messaged me earlier today. Was it the Colorado State-Nevada game?
Right, yeah.
And
it's supposed to be 20.
Supposed to be 20 degrees, and it got steamed from like 65 to 63 so far, 63.5. So, cold weather is semi-correlated to unders. And obviously in a game like this where it might be a blowout, I wouldn't be comfortable betting over at this point.
Right on. Well, I appreciate that, guys.
Yeah, thanks for the call. We appreciate it as well. We have Tim up on the line. Tim, how you doing tonight?
Hey.
Hey, how's it going? So we have, I don't know if you heard yet, but we are making everybody that calls in give us, we're putting you on the spot, but you need to give us your most heartbreaking sports moment as a fan, whether it be college, pro. I don't know if you have a specific team that you root for, but your most heartbreaking moment.
Well, Goodness. Well, as a Seahawks fan, it has to be Marshawn Lynch not getting the ball at the 1 yard line. I think that that has to be my most heartbreaking moment as a sports fan.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good one, because I think that's like if you were just asking some random person that's a fan of every team in school, I mean, that's top 25. I mean, it's the Super Bowl for one.
Well,
you're right there.
To put more salt in the wound, my wife's family happened to know a family that knew Daryl Bevel, and they managed to get a hoodie that he, like an actual game day hoodie that he wore, and they gifted it to me. So I had this Daryl Bevel hoodie that actually had his name like sewn into the hoodie, and so I wore it, like I was there. I was like, yes, like here comes Marshawn Lynch. And then, so not only was I let down, but I felt betrayed by this man whose hoodie I donned. But thanks for making me relive that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, right before you ask us a question, I wanted to put you on tilt. But if you have one still, go ahead and fire away.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I'm curious your thoughts on Washington State. I know for a few years now they've become a better team, and they tend to be undervalued going into the first half of the season because of their reputation. I'm wondering if you think the market has adjusted and that we're seeing fair lines now going into the last few weeks of college football.
I think the market's adjusted for sure. I mean, they got bet against pretty good. If anything, maybe it over-adjusted, but Cal was 10.5, moved down close 7.5 most spots last week, and then it ended up, being a 13-13 game, 19-13 final. I'm pretty sure... for me, I'm anti-Colorado in general this year. They started, I think, 5-0, haven't won a game since. And I kind of like Washington State to cover, but for no other reason than it just feels like Colorado loses out. And I have a season win total bet on them, and they started 5-0, and I might not win it. So that's my gut feeling, but no other reason other than I think my number's right at around 6.5. So at 6, it'd be a pass. But I think maybe you saw last week an over-adjustment the other way after seeing Cal get bet down quite a bit. I don't know if Matt has any other thoughts there.
Yeah, I mean, I think my problem with Washington State, I'm having a tough time getting past Washington State teams who would, they could go out and beat anyone or lose to anyone. They'd lose to the Eastern Washington the first week of the season and then come
Portland.
Back the next week and Portland State and then pull a huge upset. So they've always been a team I've kind of been nervous about taking, and then them just continuing to overachieve each week. And my inclination is to want to bet against them, but it just doesn't seem like a very smart idea. So I've kind of been lucky just staying off and not losing any money going against them.
Anything else for us?
I was also curious of your thoughts on, we know the NFL has become much of a passing league, and overs both in NFL and in college have been steady. And I'm wondering if you, if you follow any correlation between patterns in how the NFL is evolving as a game and how that's affecting how college plays, and if there's any like anticipation or predictive nature to how you approach college games in that way.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the call, Tim. Thank you. It's correlated. I mean, you can't just like blindly bet overs and turn a profit. There may have been one season, as the market was trying to adjust, like so far this season, like the NBA, like if you just blindly bet overs until recently, you'd have been up a ton.
Yeah, you got like, 4 or 5 day window though, right? I mean,
yeah, you have a week. Maybe, an NFL is going to take longer because there's not as many games. You have one game a week. But, it took maybe a season. But after that, I mean, you weren't going to be able to just blindly bet overs. You still have to pick your spots where the numbers are right. But I wouldn't say I've necessarily. So back when I was doing this, I was a rookie, right? Like 9 and 10 years ago when I was really trying to learn how to do this well. Everyone talked about betting unders and underdogs. That was generally what you did, and you're better off than betting overs and favorites. Well, rules changed in football and even basketball, and betting overs seemed to cash at a little higher rate, like he's alluding to. And so I definitely have gotten accustomed in the last 4 or 5 years of being fine with betting favorites and laying numbers that are big or betting overs. I'm not really psychologically, I think, trying to bet one or the other. I just go with, what I think makes sense. And if everything lines up, I fire. I'm not really trying to pick out overs specifically or under specifically. And so, you just kind of go with the flow. But, if there's a rule change, like drastic, like the NBA this year, you only have a week or so to capitalize. And that's honestly, one of the reasons, like my NBA season's like 35-17 or something now, is I just got really hot and saw everything right away and was able to bet on a ton of overs. I think I bet like two unders all year, and those actually ended up winning too. So my totals have just been fire. And I mean, there's nothing you can really say other than, you know, there was some rule changes and they were all playing really fast and they're all chucking a lot of threes. So anyways, whatever the league, whatever the sport, the window is super small, like Matt mentioned.
Yeah, but I think, unders have been heating up in the last week or
they
so.
They went 10-1 right? yesterday,
yeah,
the day
yeah,
before.
So yeah, so it's starting to turn out. Yeah. Yeah, shit, you're seeing totals in like 240s now. So I guess it was bound to turn eventually.
Yep, for sure. Michael, we have Michael on the line. I appreciate you calling. How are you doing tonight? Oh, he got cut off. We'll blame the producer for that. Michael, if you're listening on the stream, we apologize. Or maybe this is him right now. We actually just got another call. That was not me. I wanted to talk to you. 702-364-1100. If you have a question or you want to share,
I don't know if it is him,
your most brutal sports moment. He's back on? Nice. Hey, Michael, how you doing tonight? Sorry about that.
Hey, I'm doing great. I had actually had a trash connection, so I hung up. Guys, 1987, 13-and-a-half-hour drive to Pontiac, Michigan with my dad to meet my uncle over there. He worked for GM. Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan. I'm a 9-year-old kid. I brought my allowance money down there to bet on Andre because he was undefeated and hadn't lost in 20 years. There's no way he was going to lose.
Oh, wow.
Well, I figured out real quick that it was fixed when it was over with, and a guy that was over 7 foot, almost 500 pounds, couldn't beat Hulk Hogan. And I tell you what, my uncle never quit laughing until we got to the house. And he took my money. He didn't give it back to the
bunkie. He didn't even
give
it back.
Guys, it almost saved for a year. I mean, we're talking over 30 years ago, and I'm just a punk kid. I mean, hell, I saved and saved. He said, this is your first lesson in gambling.
9-year-old.
You were on the...
You bet it.
Oh, man.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you're on the wrong side of the biggest match in wrestling history. That's brutal.
Yeah, I certainly was. Well, I bet into a cold deck. You know, I got indoctrinated, though.
You absolutely
I figured it out.
This is amazing to me, and I'd be laughing harder if I wasn't in front of a mic. But like you still are so passionate about this over 30 years later, and you were 9 years old, and it was probably, I don't know what, $10 or something. Maybe it was more. But
sure.
I mean, that's awesome. I love it. Did you have another question for us about a game this week or anything?
It was $150, and I saved almost a year for it.
Oh, so, man.
Yeah, you got to think about 30 years ago.
That was 30 years ago.
Yeah, that's a lot more for a 9-year-old than I would have guessed, man. Damn.
Yeah. I mean, from rural Arkansas, might as well have been a million. guys, I want to tell you this, and I want to give you my opinion. I bet professionally, and I respect you guys, and that's why I'm calling in. And you guys, I wouldn't necessarily bet what you guys said just because you said it, but I like to hear what you have to say and think about it and kind of decide, you know, that you're going to put me off something or make me reevaluate something,
Something.
Yeah, that's
and
awesome.
I'm not an Arkansas fan. I'll bet against Arkansas, and I'm asking you about the Arkansas game. I'm actually on them for quite a bit this week, a big piece. Well, listen to what I have to say and tell me what you think about it. And like I said, I don't sleep in the Arkansas PJs. I don't have a little Razorback I go to bed with. LSU played their game of the year last week. And, guys, they had a bigger emphasis on that Alabama game than I think they even had in years past. I mean, they were all in. I mean, I think they actually believed they were going to win the game. If you watch Orgeron before the game started, I mean, he was ready to run through a wall, you know. I mean, break his own neck, headbutting somebody. And they obviously get handled. Now they go to Arkansas, and I've got a connection on the coaching staff there. They've been getting ready for 2 weeks. Morris actually beat Houston when he was SMU. He's got a real good record coming off a bye. This is their bowl game. This is the Super Bowl. This is what they're getting ready for. It's going to be in the high 30s there in Fayetteville. Arkansas's got a great ATS record going against them. Arkansas's going to fire their best shot. I don't think LSU even shows up. I think Arkansas's got a small chance to win outright, a lot bigger chance than the odds would indicate. But I think they stay within the 14. They've got a 14 over in Mississippi. I think in Vegas you see a lot of 13-and-a-half, 13s. But I think this is going to be a different game than a lot of people anticipate just because, guys, it doesn't matter who's better. It's who's better on the night, and the hungry dog eats. And I think Arkansas's starving, and LSU's practically full. I want to hear what you guys think.
Sure, yeah. I think so for me, I actually took a piece of 13-and-a-half today just because I saw it moving. And that's one of the advantages of being in Vegas is they're a little slower moving. And it wasn't a big bet, but I tend to agree. My number is 11 for the game. And the spot sets up pretty nice. I think I kind of like the idea of getting Arkansas first half, maybe at 7.5 or at least 7 when that comes out. I guess it might be out later tonight at Chris, and then you know tomorrow will start opening up some more spots. But I can't disagree with your thinking at all. I would think that it's down to 12 at Chris. So, I mean, it's moving that direction. So for people that are listening and agree, you know, it's probably betting now or never on Arkansas. And if you like LSU for whatever reason, you can probably wait and get maybe even an 11 or better later on this week. But, yeah, I have nothing to disagree with there. I'm curious if Matt has any other thoughts. And then I have a question real quick after that.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't ask for much more as far as the spot's concerned. And I think, you know, something you can kind of see with these teams that have new coaches, first-year guys that started really rough at the end of the or at the beginning of the season, they're still kind of playing for something. They're still trying to build towards, you know, year two, year three, and kind of get some momentum for the program going into the offseason. So I wouldn't necessarily say Arkansas's quit. Obviously, they look like they've quit just because they're not very good. But coming off the bye week, I think they have improved the last few weeks. I think they came up short against Vandy, but they played pretty well against Tulsa. So it seems like they're kind of trending in the right direction. I mean, and yeah, it just could be a spot where LSU just totally just no shows.
And, and Tulsa was without Story, but they held Tulsa to zero. So that was pretty impressive. I will say I read a stat, I think it was during the Vandy week, and I had wound up betting Vanderbilt and bought a little bit back. So it was a smaller bet on Vanderbilt. But I read that Arkansas, I mean, defensively, they're flying a little under the radar, and now they've had the bye week. But they've held four of their opponents to their lowest yardage total on the season. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head who those opponents are. Tulsa was obviously one of them. And then I think there was the Colorado State game may have been one. And even Auburn, they outgained Auburn, even though they lost by 31, by like 80 or 90 yards. Defensively, I think Arkansas is flying a little under the radar. And if we learned anything, it's that LSU's offense isn't great. Bama was obviously awesome, too. But I think... I like the bet, and I don't know, is he still on the line? Can you hear us?
Yeah, guys, go ahead.
I have a question, so because Matt and I were talking about this right before we hit record. Arkansas basketball, not sure if you followed it as closely. They play Texas tomorrow.
Of course.
What are your thoughts real quick on that? They lost a ton of players. We kind of both like Texas, at least Matt did. That's what he mentioned, and I may end up putting some money on it, but I'm curious if you have any thoughts about Arkansas hoops.
I'd put my lungs on Texas or anybody of any worth or any other internal organ somebody will give me money for, because Mike Anderson's one of the most overpaid coaches in the country.
Amen.
He's one of the worst. And I know, guys, I know you know. He's one of the worst X's and O's coaches in the country. He's got no idea what he's doing. He's been at Arkansas. This is his eighth year. He's never been out of the second round. I'm going to tell you something else. I heard the other night on the Duke Kentucky, and they're talking about Daniel Gafford and SEC Player of the Year.
Uh-huh. Right,
this guy, he quit in high school in the championship game. He begged out. If you watched him against Butler, they had guards rooting him out. He begged out of that game, too. He's a front runner, and when it gets tough and it gets hot, he quits. He reminds me of who's Towns at Kentucky, who plays for Minnesota. He's got his personality. He's got his heart. He's got his work ethic. The problem is he didn't have his talent. So Arkansas, they bring back three scholarship players. I think Texas brings back four of their starters. Of course, they lost Mobamba, but I like Texas big in the game. And if I was going to, you know, buy Arkansas or sell them for a year, I would certainly sell them. And let me just say something else to bring us back to the Arkansas game here. Obviously, like, what's the line on the Texas-Arkansas game, by the way, in basketball?
6.5, last we looked. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's cheap.
It's neutral, very, but very Texas cheap. Minus 6.5. Yeah, I think it's a little short.
There's a key player on the Arkansas defense, and it's kind of applicable to the Dallas Cowboys and Sean Lee. When he's in there, they're a different defense. And actually, he went out like the first or second play against Vanderbilt. They've got a couple of the leading tacklers in the SEC, Drake Greenlaw and Scooter Harris. So I'm just telling you, this guy makes the defense different. He's there. There's 13 players on the Arkansas defense from Louisiana, and they've had their best, most spirited practice in 2 weeks. And Chad Morris is going around telling everybody, this is our game. We will show up. Now, remember, two weeks ago, I was on Vanderbilt when Vanderbilt came in here. That was the low point. I think this week you'll see the high point in Arkansas.
Right on, man. We appreciate the call.
Thank you, sir.
That's good info. I didn't know they had 13 players from Louisiana. You always hear about that in, like, the Miami or Florida games where, you know, the UCF or South Florida is playing one of the big brothers. And no, that's pretty good information. I still think it's a pretty high variance game where and I've bet against LSU a couple times in the last month. I ended up betting some Bama minus 14. But it's LSU could easily win the game by 14 as well or more and, like, blow Arkansas out just because Arkansas won't be able to score very well. But Arkansas could easily win the game outright, too. So I think it's a pretty good high variance of money line round robin play.
Yeah, I think it seems like it makes sense. And, I don't know. Just, you know, it's LSU team. We really haven't been that impressed with them all year anyway. So, you know, wouldn't be surprised at all if they kind of unravel now that, you know, they lost that game in that fashion of Bama.
Basically just, out of it. Yeah.
You know, what are they really playing for?
Even though I guess they're still seventh in the college football
playoffs. Yeah, I mean, they're pretty much playing for, what, another Citrus Bowl appearance, you know. So, it's, you know, it's season's kind of over for them.
So we have, we'll go like, I know we start a little late, so we'll go like another 10 to 12 minutes if we can. And if there is a call, go ahead and give us one. First and 20 for Wake. I don't know how that happened. Anyway, still sweating this no overtime now for the under. But real quick, we have some questions. We got four or five, a couple college basketball related ones. First, though, I'm just going in order I got them. Let's just start with this. This one, I actually have a question just because you're over at Caesars now. Do you see anyone sharply in there betting Super Bowl futures during the season?
Yeah, I think you pretty much know the price. You know the buy price that you want to take a bet on. If you go through the other places, you get an idea of what the market is. And if you want to take a bet on a team, you pretty much know what you need to be at, and they'll show up, you know, that day or the next day. Like, they go through it, and
sure,
you know, they'll come and clean it up. If it's something worth betting. If you can't get a bet, then you know it's probably not good news. But you know, for the most part, they'll show up, especially with something as efficient as a Super Bowl market, where you might be able to find yes nos later. Yeah, they'll definitely show up.
So this question particularly comes from the Winning Run. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on Saints plus 500 to win the Super Bowl. I'll tune in. So thank you for the question. And if you are tuning in, thank you. We appreciate it. For me, it's tough to find value in the futures market. I think like week 10 of the NFL season. If anything, it's like longer shots that have started slow maybe. But it seemed like the Saints, who are now, you know, tiebreaker with the Rams to be the one seed of the NFC. Like, I don't know. It's tough for me to just take them at 5-1 to win it all. But I also agree to an extent where it's them or the Rams. Like, they're on a tier, I think, above everyone else, even though I have some money on the Falcons at 70-1 and the Vikings at 12-1 was my only real future I bet before the season. So I'm kind of like just okay with it. I think the Saints and Rams are just better than everyone else. But 5-1 is probably a fair price at this point. It's one of those things where it's just tough to find value, I think, at this point in the year in the NFL and a Super Bowl market. If you had bet the Saints, you know, even just a month ago, probably would have been at least 8 or 9-1, I imagine. So anyways, that's kind of where I'm at with it, but I'm not sure if you guys have anyone in there betting the Saints to win it all in week 10.
I mean, not to be mean, but it doesn't seem like a very good bet to me. You can't take any team coming off of their best game of the year when they beat the 8-0 undefeated NFL.
Too.
You just can't bet them right now,
If they lose to Cincinnati, maybe you get a better prize.
You know, if we end up discussing Duke basketball, I think you could maybe make the same argument with, once the price has been adjusted now. So I just don't think you can bet a team off of their most dominant showing of the year.
You can you didn't have to say now that the price has been bet down if you didn't want to.
No, if you disagree with me. Because if you could get the same prices before that game, okay, it's totally fair. But if you're taking 3-1 or 250 now, it's just silly. Or like the -300 to make to be a one seed, or what was it?
Are those up now?
The undefeated is only like 12-1 now. I mean, come on.
Oh wow,
that's ridiculous.
And the ACC, that's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, it's absurd. Yeah.
So that we'll tie that to the next question then, because someone did ask Desert Bro, Duke plus 250 to win it all. And then you had a question about Syracuseville, but so it sounds like Matt's anti.
I mean, they're awesome. Don't get me wrong. I could see more just as much as anyone that they're dominant.
I don't pretend.
One game.
I don't pretend to be like an NBA scout, but it's the sport I played the most growing up, and that I think the sport I understand the most. And I didn't watch the first like 6 or 7 minutes, and you messaged me, and you kind of liked Kentucky because Duke had started hot, and Kentucky was like 0-for from three, and. I looked and I got some double digits with Kentucky, and it took me like 4 or 5 minutes to watch that game. And I realized, I was like, holy cow, these guys are so damn good.
Yeah.
There's no way they're ever getting stopped. And I praise Kentucky for going on a little mini run to cut 17-13. I was able to get off of it. And plus the live line was still like kind of correlated to the fact that Kentucky was a favorite anyway before the game. And so I was able to, I set up a middle that had no shot because Duke crushed them. But I was watching them, and we bet second half over really big. So it worked out. But I'll say R.J. Barrett and Zion are two players that are NBA ready right now and would make impacts on teams in the NBA right now, I promise. And they're going to probably go 1-2 in the NBA draft. And then they have the other guy who's probably going to go 5th or 6th. They're just way good. So I mean, I went over and I grabbed as much plus 450, 400 that people would offer me. And it's one of those, I do think, you can tell me if I'm wrong or if the comparison's bad. But, I mean, Kentucky was pick against the field before the tournament in March a couple years back. I think 250 and 300 is an injury fade because it'll be about that come March. I really believe Duke will be pick.
Yeah, I think it's very positive. I mean, they're going to get that strength of schedule bump. They're going to probably, the one seed is.
Sure, they could even, they'll lose a couple games.
But how deep are they? And, how tough are these freshmen? How physically ready? I mean, are Barrett and Reddish, are they, because they're like, what, 6'7"? Like, are they physically going to make it through the entire season, you think, as freshmen without wearing down and having to play 30, 35 minutes?
So I want to write an article about this because I think this is, by total coincidence, a very good parallel to Alabama this year. Where Saban's been smart enough in games where it didn't matter, which is basically anything but LSU, and even the LSU game wouldn't have mattered, he doesn't play his starters or Tua longer than they need to.
Right.
And Krzyzewski's going to have a lot of spots. Now, basketball is a different sport. There's a lot more possessions. But I think he realizes how good they're going to be in a couple days. I mean, they're going to be like minus 30-something against Army. I mean, they're just going to roll through, I think. And at some point, he's realized the best and most important thing isn't even going to be going undefeated or winning a couple extra games, especially in games that they're already up big anyways. But it's just resting guys 5 minutes into the second half. And there's going to be something. We're talking about how Alabama's undefeated ATS in the first half, and the times to bet against them are just betting the other team second half. It's going to be like that for Duke, I think. I think Duke's going to cover a lot of first halves, and if Krzyzewski's benching guys and resting them to fade injuries for 15 minutes in the second half, one, it's smart, but two, it's going to give, because they aren't as deep, it's going to give their opponents a chance to cover a ton of second half spreads. So I'm going to try to look into that early, maybe kind of, you know, beat people to the punch now that I'm telling everyone that I'm going to do it. But I'm going to at least watch it closely, because I think there's going to be some parallel there to what Bama has been doing, and it'll be interesting to see.
Because I think that, you know, we've had Kentucky's had a few of these juggernaut freshman classes come in, and none of the teams that are loaded with just freshmen and no other like key significant contributors coming back, they've never ended up dominating throughout the season. They all go through that. And I'm not saying what I watch. I definitely do believe this is probably the best team in the country, and they're probably going to end up being really good. But we just still haven't seen it yet. You know what I mean? So I kind of want to see a little bit more. I want to make sure that this wasn't just one ungodly performance at the beginning of the year, which, it's probably not. It probably wasn't an aberration. But I don't know. It's interesting with a team loaded with freshmen. None of them have played in a tournament. Like, I don't know. I just want to know, like, how that leadership plays out in March.
I agree with you. And I even said, you know, this is the type of game where Kentucky starts slow. They always grind back and, like, make it close. And I still think Kentucky they're probably the second best team in the country.
Yeah, I mean, but Kansas look pretty damn good.
I'm telling you, I'm not an NBA scout. But watching those guys, they were making NBA-level plays that were just unguardable.
Right.
And if no one else has that type of – I mean, then they have at least two of them that are at that level – maybe three in the top five. I just don't see anyone stopping them. It's at a level that I just haven't seen before. And it's similar to before the season. I saw Tua play for one half against Georgia. I've told you this before, but I drove straight to Westgate, bet them +250 to win it all this year, just because if their offense is that good, I don't know. And Bama's already good anyways. Anyways, well, I think it could be very similar to that.
Yeah, there's a window right there, you know, when a team is hovering, you know, they go from like 252 and then they have that one game, they jump to the chalk. You know, like Bama did, or like Kentucky did a couple years ago in basketball, like you said. So that very well could happen. And when that does happen, I might try to snag it. We'll see.
Real quick, Wake, NC State. NC State had a 4th-and-3 to end the game. Wake, no timeouts, 1 minute left.
Oh, my gosh.
He was kind of held, but it was a high throw from Finley. And we have to sweat maybe the under if the field goal happens. And we're still like 21 points ahead. Or no, it'd be 15.5. Oh, this is going to be ugly if it goes to overtime.
I defended this duffel bag better guy earlier today, and he had NC State, so.
He bought the half on an 18,
making
right?
Making me look bad already, yeah. But
a couple more questions, and we'll end this thing. From at Darren, MMOV, he said, the best over bet this Saturday. And I will be honest, I have not bet more than one total, and it was an under.
Yeah, this is under season for me. I can't even win overs in September, much less November.
Producer's pointing at the UNLV game.
Probably a safe bet.
I actually like under some in that game. I bet a little bit of 54.5 today. But no offense, Jared. Yeah, no offense. Really quick, though, I think the one that's so obvious that it's probably where it should be, if not maybe a little high, but everything lines up so brilliantly, is Illinois' run game is really, really good this year, and Nebraska can't defend the run. And Nebraska's, I mean, I think both teams average over 5 yards a carry. They both play pretty quick still. Both teams are just dreadful defending the run, and they both are so good. It seems too obvious, but where it's sometimes those obvious ones, you know, it's going to be whatever, 31-21 at halftime, and you only need like 17 in the second half to get an over 69 in. So good luck, but that would probably be my pick if I had to bet an over right now, is Nebraska-Illinois.
Yeah, I'm looking. I don't have anything really.
So last one, we're going to end with this. Sean Hunter asked about a Friday night game, which I will talk about a little bit right after myself, because I do have a bet in that game. But Matt has an aside he's looking at in the Ohio State game against Sparty. Someone asked thoughts on -3.5 at Sparty. And then what do you make the line Ohio State versus Michigan?
All right, so we're talking about Sparty, Ohio State?
Correct.
Yeah, no. Looking at this, you know, it's really hard to find a way to get kind of behind Ohio State. I mean, they seem to just be that team that disappoints you week after week. How many games have they covered this year? Maybe –
I think 4 or 5 in a row that they haven't covered, right?
4 or 5 in a row, yeah. They've really struggled. But, you know, looking at Michigan State, obviously everyone that's listened all year knows we're not impressed by Michigan State, really, for the most part, or at least I'm not. Last 2 weeks, they've gotten to face a Purdue team that was coming off that huge Ohio State blowout, really tough spot. Didn't even think they played that great and just, you know, ended up getting it done. And then last week, catching Maryland after the scandal broke and the week that they had, there was just no way they were facing an opponent that was ready to play. So now they come home, face the most athletic, most talented, you know, as Ohio State always is, team that they've played all year, And I just don't know how this team has the speed or talent or anything to keep up with Ohio State, unless they grow the grass out a foot long, which is probably
slow
what they're going to do. And
yeah,
it's going to look like you're watching games in slow motion like it always is in East Lansing. But I just don't see how they have the talent. And then you look at Urban Meyer, last road game, got embarrassed at Purdue, played terrible against Nebraska, had to claw their way through to win that game. And then now you're going, you're telling me that they're going to lose their second straight road game under Meyer with, you know, needing to win this game to face Michigan? I mean, it's really asking a lot. And I'm aware that Ohio State hasn't been impressive this year, but I don't see anything on the Michigan State side I really like, and seems like a pretty good spot probably to buy low on Ohio State, and they probably put together their best effort of the year.
It's definitely a good buy low spot, and I'll end up having some money here too, I think, on Ohio State. Their run game's been really poor, defending the run game, I should say, defensively, where they've really been hit. And one thing that they can do outside of just preparing and you know, realizing that this is a huge game for them, they are the better team. They are quicker. But if they can't defend the run, they're screwed. But Lewerke, I know, he was injured for a game. Dude, that guy just woke up, didn't know the ball was coming to him, and just caught it.
Unreal.
The guy who kicked the field real quick, the Wake Forest kicker, kicked his career high earlier in the game, 47-yarder. It's about where they're at now. Look at him. He's not even ready for it. Oh, no, he was turned. That was my bad. He had turned, but then it was just a bad throw behind him, and the defender just let him catch it. Anyways, Lewerke has a shoulder injury. The last few games, he's missed a ton of throws. Basically, if it's 15 yards or further down the field, he's missed them. They probably should have beat Maryland by 35 instead of whatever, 24 to 3. I think if Ohio State just stacks the box and says, hey, Lewerke, beat us through the air, it's just not going to happen. I mean, his throwing shoulder is injured. He missed a game because of it just 3 weeks ago. So I think I like that. I liked the under and was actually had circled it for an under bet just because Ohio State and Michigan State's defense is going to be tough to run on Michigan State.
It's going to be bad weather too.
And the weather's going to be bad. And they came out way lower than, you know, where it probably should have been. Tip pass catch, I think, for Wake, by the way. So this will get interesting. Maybe they just score a touchdown and win the game. But anyway, I like the game. It's going to be a really interesting one, and it'll be, I think, interesting to see where it closes because it's basically sat at 3.5 all week. I don't know if you guys got any bets on this game that you from guys you respect or anything at Caesars, but it's just sat at 3.5 everywhere.
No, it's been pretty slow, but we took a little bit of Ohio State money, so I just went to 4 today. So.
Oh, you guys did. I missed that then. I saw CG did. It was the only book I saw.
I don't know.
Did.
We'll see. You know, it might be sharp. There was, you know, so I can't get too much into it, but there was a little bit of money on Michigan State early in the week, and then just really nothing.
Seems like
days,
a game so. That would generally get bet a ton. I guess that was my main point, is just to say it's one that gets a lot of action.
It definitely will, but the people that like betting that game come in on Friday or Saturday.
That's a good point. Cool. One last one from Sean Hunter. Fresno, Boise. I am taking a stand. I bet Fresno -2, 2.5s around. I know some sharp guys that bet +3, and I knew people would bet Boise getting points at home. I was telling Matt on Sunday night, I was just like, and I watched that BYU-Boise game, and I've watched other Boise games like Oklahoma State. Did they play anybody good? They've been beat up pretty good. Boy, if BYU had 5 trips inside the 10 that resulted in a total of 6 points against Boise, and they still almost won that game, Boise just isn't as good. And Fresno's going to tell them, I mean, they almost beat Boise. They did beat Boise one of the 2 games last year, maybe?
Yeah, I think they beat them in the regular season.
And then they lost in the Mountain West Conference title game. They're just another level now. They're the tier that's it's them, then probably Utah State, and then Boise, I think, in my opinion. Which is fine. It can happen. So I'm trying to, I guess, jump and guess when it is that Boise, you know, kind of relinquishes their crown of being the Mountain West Conference / San Diego State champions, right? But I like Fresno. I think they're just the way better team. The one worry, and I, you know, this stuff technically doesn't matter when it comes to like numbers and everything. They haven't played anyone good in a long time.
Not
I wouldn't be surprised
all.
If Boise scored first or something, and it kind of, you know, they need a wake up to get going because they haven't played a competition that really matches even Boise, who I think is overrated, but Boise's better than anyone they've played for a month. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, but I did bet Fresno State, and it's a Friday night game, so it'll be a fun one to watch for people that don't get to go out and, you know, party or whatever people do.
Yeah, I mean, I like them too. I think it, you know, Fresno's pretty much the class of the conference this year. I'm not impressed by Boise's defense, which was supposed to be really stout. They just haven't been good this year really at all. Some bad teams putting up a lot of numbers. Their running game's not good, and Fresno's, I think they're number 5 in the country in yards per pass allowed. So you got a Boise team that's relying on the pass against a really good secondary. How much are they going to be able to run the ball? And I know it's, you know, Boise, first time home underdog in 18 years or whatever, but I just think that's such a terrible reason to back Boise. Right. So if you do like Boise, which there have been, I've seen respectable people on both sides of this game, it's pretty split, and its numbers been bouncing around like crazy, but just don't bet the game just because Boise's underdog. Like, I don't know. This is a really good Fresno team, really well coached, and they have an experienced quarterback, so, and good defense, so there's no reason they should get flustered on the road, but, you know, like
referee for the win, no field goal. Referee screen.
God.
Dude, watch this. I know you were actually paying attention to the podcast.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Sorry.
It was a total screen from the ref. Like he's tackled almost always if the ref's not there and screens the defender.
And while we're on here, let's give Clausen some credit. Third string quarterback going on the road, 19-point dog, and going to somehow win this game with just a horrendous defense. I think they've lost 12 starters to injury this year. Like it's
on defense?
No, like
or
overall,
just total,
but they're
total,
just
total.
Absolutely buried. So unbelievable if they win this game. It's pretty awesome.
They need to make this because Finley will probably get them to like the 40, and they'll have to fade a Hail Mary. But the field goal, if they don't make the extra point, would be brutal. I wanted to reiterate one more thing, and we're going to close this up. I appreciate everyone tuning in. Sorry, I got excited. I really didn't want to fade the under that I posted live for everybody in overtime, especially when it was like 6-0 mid-second quarter. Matt made a great point about don't just bet Boise because they haven't been a dog at home in like 18 years, which is a narrative that you'll hear probably all week, especially on Friday. And you know, from a lot of people as like a reason to bet. I'm like, they're getting points at home. Boise hasn't gotten points at home in forever. You have to bet. It just doesn't make any sense. There's a reason they're getting points at home anyways. I, you know, maybe they are going to end. There was also a nice block there. I just saw the replay, but you saw the ref. He got totally got punished. But here it is. Here's a replay that's just like,
wow. Ooh.
Yeah, and the guy that was on the left side had no shot. So anyway, that's a good thing to remember. If you take anything away from this podcast, we appreciate everyone that listened, but don't just bet narratives. You need to have other reasons.
Boise, 28-0 at half, I'm sure, but, you know.
it's probably that, or I think Fresno just, like, puts it on them.
Yeah.
I think it is kind of one or the other.
Right. Maybe not that to that degree,
but
I could see it being a convincing win.
Like 38-13 Fresno, or like 28-3. Boise at halftime or something like that makes a lot of sense. Anyways, again, thank you guys. We appreciate it. This was a Petty Moose. Thank you, Jared. As always, thank you, Matt, for being here. We appreciate it. We will talk to you guys next week.